सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। ॐ समस्तजनकल्याणे निरतं करुणामयं नमामि चिन्मयं देवं सद्गुरुं ब्रह्मविद्वरम्। ॐ पार्थाय प्रतिबोधितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन ग्रथितां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीं अम्बत्वामनुसन्दधामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणीम्। नमोऽस्तु ते व्यासविशालबुद्धे पुल्लारविन्दायदपत्रनेत्र येन त्वया भारततैलपूर्णः प्रज्वालितो ज्ञानमयप्रदीपः प्रपन्नपारिजाताय स्तोत्रवेत्रैकपाणये ज्ञानमुद्राय कृष्णाय गीतामृतदुहे नमः। सर्वोपनिषदो गावो दुग्धा गोपालनन्दन पार्थो वत्सः सुधीर्भोक्ता दुग्धं गीतामृतं महत् वसुदेवसुतं देवं कंसचाणूरमर्दनं देवकी परमानन्दं कृष्णं वन्दे जगद्गुरुं। भीष्मद्रोणतरजयद्रथजला गान्धारनीलोत्पला शल्यग्राहवती कृपेण वहनी कर्णेन वेलाकुला अश्वत्थामविकर्णघोरमकरा दुर्योधनावर्तिनी सोत्तीर्णा खलु पाण्डवैरणनदी कैवर्तकक्केशवः। पाराशर्यवसोऽर्जुन्ममलं गीतार्थगन्धोत्कटं वंसगे पाराशर्यवचः सरोजममलं गीतार्थगन्धोत्कटं नानाख्यानकेसरं हरिकथा सम्बोधनाबोधितं लोके सज्जनषट्पदैरहरः पेपीयमानं मुदा भूयाद्वारदपङ्गजं कलिमल प्रध्वंसिनश्रेयसे। मूकं करोति वाचालं पङ्गुं लङ्घयते गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वन्दे परमानन्दमाधवं यं ब्रह्मा वरुणेन्द्ररुद्रमरुतः स्तुन्वन्ति दिव्यैस्तवैः वेदैः साङ्गपदक्रमोपनिषदैः गायन्ति यं सामगा नानावस्थितदद्गतेन मनसा पश्यन्ति यं योगिनो यस्यान्तं न विदुःसुरा सुरगणाः। देवाय तस्मै नमः देवाय तस्मै नमः। भूलेषु गोकुलेश्वर कृष्णचन्द्र भगवान् की जय। सद्गुरुनाथ महाराज की जय। सो इट सीम्स दैट Anilji has finished 5 chapters of the Bhagavad Gita and he is getting ready to start with chapter number 6, the yoga of self-abidance, or as we call meditation. We figured we'll review first 5 chapters, hopefully with input from you all, so that I know how much we have picked up. Because this is not the first time we have gone through this first 5 chapters, right? Is it the second or third time? Anybody wants to answer that? At least second times, probably third. So then practice makes perfect, right? So then we should be able to at least have some idea of what we have learned, because that is called progress. Otherwise, we are not going anywhere. In Gujarati, there is a phrase, a term, gada no bel. The bullock travels thousands and thousands of miles over its life, but because it's going round and round and round, it's not getting anywhere. We shouldn't be doing that to ourselves. We should be earning something. This is to be earned, okay? It requires effort. That's why it's called earning. You know, a lot of people, when you read their resumes, they will say, earned masters in so-and-so, which means he worked his butt off to make that happen. It requires a lot of effort. And so, if we are studying Bhagavad Gita for the third time around, then as Gurudev would say, let the Bhagavad Gita go through us. We have gone through the Gita so many times. So with that understanding, we'll start reviewing the first chapter. Can anybody say how the first chapter starts? What is the very first phrase? Nope. Dhritarashtra uvacha. That is the very first phrase. That's where Bhagavad Gita starts. And there's a very great significance to that little term. We need to understand that because it affects us, each one of us. It affects us severely. He's a king, like each one of us is king or queen, as the case may be. He's a king, but he's blind. He's physically blind. People who are physically blind but get somewhere in life, they are known as prajna chakshu. Prajna means jnanam, knowledge. Those who may not have physical eyes can easily develop with lots of effort the eyes of knowledge. Dhritarashtra was an exception to that. He had neither of the. He was physically blind. He was emotionally blind. He was intellectually blind. And he was spiritually blind. That's where all the problems started. Think about it. We learned Bhagavad Gita. We missed out on this major issue. I don't think anybody ever has told you this. Because of this pervading blindness at all levels, he has unreasonable bias for things and beings, good and bad. So this widespread blindness is the first thing we should note as we study Bhagavad Gita and try and understand what it means. Because all this pervading blindness makes him unfit to be a king. And yet he is a king. So the understanding should be that there is a Dhritarashtra element in each one of us. There is Dhritarashtra element in each one of us. Because in most cases, we can't see truth from untruth. We always have narrow perspective of life. If that little being that is within us, if we give that being the status of a king, then we have a problem. That is where the problem starts. We automatically give that particular being status of a king. That king rules in us and makes us do what we do. And when we do that, when we establish that element as the king in us, then we invite conflicts in life automatically. Me and mine, you and yours, severe likes and dislikes, these are our problems. They all can be collectively called Dhritarashtra. They are our problems. We come to this class, or for that matter, any place else where you go to study spirituality. This is our problem. And this turmoil between the good and the bad within us is the Mahabharata war. That is the Mahabharata. That is the basis, that is the substratum on which Bhagavad Gita is built. So with that understanding, we start reviewing the first chapter. Quite a few of us have the text, right? Good. Open it. That'll be worthwhile. So first and second verse is just a conversation. Dharmakshetre Kurukshetre Samaveta Yuyutsavah Mamaka Pandavascheva Kimakurvata Sanjaya. Dhritarashtra asks this question to Sanjaya. Sanjaya says, Dashvatu Pandavanikam Yudham Duryodhanasada Acharyam Upasangamya Raja Bachanam Abravita. That's the second one. That's the conversation between the king, the blind king, and the one who describes the war to that blind king, Sanjaya. So if you go through verses 3 to 13, the description of how Duryodhana goes to Bhishma Pitamaha and explains to him as if he didn't know. See, this is the ego. This is the ego. This is the mithyabhimana, the false pride that makes us do things like this. He went to Bhishma Pitamaha, who knew exactly what was going on. And he explains to him what's going on. See the vain attitude? That's what hurts us. We also do this. He says, Pashyantam Pandavutranam Acharyam Mahatichamam Vyudhadrupadputrena Tavashishyena Dhimataha Atrashura Maheshwasa Bhimarjuna Samayudhi Yudhano Viradascha Drupadascha Maharatha Drishtaketu Shekitana and so on and so forth. He explains what Pandava army is constituted of, what the great warriors and great fighters they have. And he goes on blabbering so much that Bhishma gets tired and he says, let's get going with this. And so he is the first one to blow his conch. And naturally, the blowing of the conch is the announcement that the war begins. And so when the one party does that, the second party responds. And then so in verses 14 through 25, Lord Krishna first blows his conch, followed by Arjuna, and then the others. That's how the war is to begin. But before the war can begin, Arjuna says, I want to see who has the gall. You know, Arjuna thinks, who has the gall to fight against me? I want to see their faces. He says, Krishna, please take me. Please show me who am I supposed to fight against. Krishna could have taken him to the whole bunch of little warriors and said, okay, here are the whole lakhs of them. They are going to fight against you and your army. Krishna was extremely smart. He knew what's going on in this poor guy's mind. So he took him right in the middle of the war field where his immediate cousins, his great-grandsire, his teacher, his colleagues, they were all standing right there, some willingly, some unwillingly, ready to fight. Unwillingly because they had incurred gratitude of Duryodhana, so they had no choice. When Arjuna sees this sight, he just, all the air goes out of the tire. Why? Talking about fighting is something. Actually facing it and realizing what's involved, what's going to happen at the end of this whole exercise, shakes the daylight out of you. When Arjuna sees this, he becomes totally despondent. He becomes totally dejected. Why? Because he has severe delusion. What is delusion? Moha. What is moha? That which permits us that which permits us to see things as they are not, is delusion. To see a snake on the rope is delusion. As Gurudev would say, non-apprehension creates misapprehension. When you don't apprehend the truth, you end up apprehending untruth. And then your entire thought process from that point on is built on that untruth, which has no actual basis. Don't we do that all the time? Think about it. We do that all the time. In Hindi, there is a kahavat, says, pair moment alma. That's what it is. You speak something and then realize, oh, what did I do? So eating your own words. There's so many different ways of expressing this. In Gujarati, there is another big, very severe kahavat like this, says, Matu bandhin, matu kapi ne pagri bandhin. First you cut off the head, and then say, oh no, I had to put the turban on. What the hell does it mean? The head is gone. We do that all the time. Our life is full of that. There's no end to it. So Arjuna becomes very despondent. He sees his kinsman in the battle on the other side. He loses his confidence. He's disheartened. His weapons start falling. He's starting to feel, he starts getting all kinds of goosebumps. He's sweating. He's showing all the signs of severe depression. And therefore, anytime such things happen, we always assume that we are always right. We can never be wrong. Our biggest problem in life is that we can never be wrong. Everybody else is wrong. And therefore, because everybody else is wrong, we try and tell them why you are wrong. That's our standard way of life. No wonder life is full of sorrows. We work at it very wrong. So Arjuna says, why fight the war? What's the point? After fighting the war and killing all these people, I'm going to get this kingdom. Am I going to enjoy this? I'll be so unhappy. So what is the point in fighting such war? And then of course, in his own way, because he has to justify what he says. He goes through a long list of things, of how things would work bad, and how life would become miserable, and how the society will go to dogs, and how the nation would go to dogs, and how life would be just unbelievably bad. So he says, Lord, I do not want the enjoyment coming out of this war. This victory does not really, I don't think it gives me any pleasure, or it would give me any pleasure, because it comes by killing my own kith and kin, my teachers, and otherwise friends. Says, what pleasure could you derive after doing such bad things? And Arjuna keeps going on further in verses 38 to 47, which is where this chapter ends. Keeps going on and on and on and on. 38 to 47, which is where this chapter ends. He tells Krishna, he has this amazing delusion. He tells Lord Krishna what will happen to the society. He's telling the Lord. That's just mind-boggling. Wow. We do that all the time. We look up and say, why me? He's not there. So Arjuna says, you see, Lord, just because they want to fight, why should I fight? Why should I do what they want to do? I'm content with wherever I am. I don't have even 5 villages, which is all we asked for last time. Lord Krishna went to Duryodhana's darbar, says, okay, don't give anything, don't give half of the kingdom. Just give 5 villages to Pandavas, they'll be happy. They won't bother you no more. And Arjuna says, I won't even give you the land that can stand on the point of an arrow. That was the response by Duryodhana. But Arjuna says, why should I do what they want to do? Because from the destruction of family units, Arjuna says, from the destruction of the family unit. Impiety, lack of religiousness happens. This is Arjuna, these are Arjuna's words. And he goes on to say, women become corrupt. What about you? You know, it's very easy to say women become corrupt. Who makes them corrupt? There's only other half left. That's men. It's easy to blame. Arjuna says, women will become corrupt. All the caste systems will get mixed up. The family will then fall to evil ways, he says. All the religious rites that we practice will be destroyed. He just takes it to the other end. And all these because of greed? To win this war? No, no, no. I do not want to do this. And he makes a very profound, not profound, very powerful sounding statement. He says, death to me by my enemy is preferable. When you are afraid, when you are scared, you hide behind ahimsa. Gandhiji very clearly said, ahimsa of a weak person is unacceptable. These are his words. Ahimsa only can be practiced when you are strong, when you know you can handle it, and yet you don't want to do it unless it's absolutely necessary. That is ahimsa. Ahimsa is not a coward hiding behind this beautiful sounding word and practice. So having said all this, Arjuna drops his weapons. He sits down on the floor of the chariot. And all this time, something beautiful is happening. Bhagavan keeps looking at him. Bhagavan doesn't even smile. He doesn't even bother to smile at him. Bhagavan says, oh, okay, yes. Oh, that's the way it is? Okay. So he just keeps looking at it. That is where the first chapter ends and the second chapter begins. So in the first three verses of second chapter, Bhagavan responds to Arjuna. Bhagavan says, you talk like an intellectual, but you behave like an idiot. How does that work out? And Bhagavan smiles after saying that. Bhagavan disapproves what Arjuna has said so far. And he cautions Arjuna, don't be impotent. The word is klebya, used in our tradition, old tradition of India. The word there is, you are neither a man nor a woman. The term is hijada. Bhagavan calls him that. You think how strong that term is. Shock treatment to wake him up. And then Arjuna gets going again from verse 4 through 10. Because his intellect, he's a very intelligent person, very well educated person. Very wise person as a rule. So the thought is here that even for those of us who are like that, this kind of things can happen to us. So we have to be constantly alert and vigilant. Do not let this kind of weaknesses get into us. Why? We'll see that later. So Arjuna again gets going and says, Lord, I tell you, beggary is better than the prosperity gained by killing your kinsfolk. But as I said, bottom line is, Arjuna is very, very intelligent. He has good head on his shoulder. So having said all this, He knows inside he's wrong. And he has the good sense then ultimately to tell the Lord, Shishyastiham Shadimam Tvam Prapanna. Lord, I surrender to you. I am your disciple. Now you tell me what is right. This is actually where Bhagavad Gita teaching actually begins. So the first thing is complete surrender to the teacher. Complete surrender to the teacher is an absolute necessity. We learned that in 4th and 5th chapter. Absolute necessity to be able to learn how to live our life and be happy, be joyful. So now that Arjuna has come, surrendered to the Lord, now Lord begins his teaching in the verses. I'm not going to go through details because you are supposed to have learned all this, okay, please. And therefore also the questions should be limited until the end. And if anyone has any question, please, at the end of the class, we will talk about that. So in verses 11 through 15, Bhagavan now tries to alleviate the grief that is caused to Arjuna as a result of which he is blabbering like this incoherently. And after calming him down in those four verses, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, five verses, Bhagavan now starts teaching Arjuna Sankhya Yoga. The chapter 2, its name is Sankhya Yoga, the yoga of knowledge. It is said that this particular chapter is essentially a prelude to the entire Bhagavad Gita, where Bhagavan has, in one way or the other, summarized the whole Bhagavad Gita so that we can get a glimpse of what we are going to learn. Also, we need to go back one step and understand that the first chapter that ended is called Arjuna Vishada Yoga. Vishada is sorrow. Sorrow is not yoga. But the great sage Madhusudan Saraswati says, Vishada Yoga. Because if sorrow in our life allows us to become wise, knowledgeable, then that sorrow is yoga. If we remain where we are, there is another kehavat in Gujarati, Mel Karvat Mochi Na Mochi. If we remain the same, like Guruji used to say, always he still says that. He says, if you keep doing what you are doing, then you will keep getting what you are getting. Whatever you sow, so you reap. That's life. So because that sorrow of Arjuna results in the self-knowledge ultimately for him, that's why it is called yoga. So anything that's negative, like sorrow, can be turned into positive, is the thought. So Bhagavan explains in verses 16 through 25 how the unreal can never exist. And at the same time, the real can never perish. This truth has to be fully understood. Unreal cannot exist. It may appear to be there, but it's not going to be there. Like we say, Meru Marichi, the water that you see in the desert, or the mother of the pearl that you see on the beach, that's not real. Running after that is not going to get you anywhere. The sooner you wise up, the better you're off. So the unreal never exists, and the real never perishes. And therefore, that spark of life in this body which is born and therefore it must perish one day, that's a given. It goes through 6 modifications, right? Asti, jayate, vardate, apakshiyate, kshiyate, nashyate. 6 variations. We have a problem with these 6 variations only when it's the last variation. Otherwise, we are very happy. Little baby is, hi baby, hello, 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 how are you, da, 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 da. And then the baby grows up to be a youth. Oh, I tell you, my son, I'm telling you, such a bright kid. Kya baat. Grows up to a handsome man. Oh my God, my daughter is so pretty. I hope she gets a very good husband. Blah, blah, blah. Then she gets her own family, and then there are grandchildren. Says, oh my God, I tell you, those grandchildren are my life. We never realize that everybody is getting old. Guys, we are all growing old in terms of the physical existence. And anything that is within the time-space constraint constantly changes, and therefore it must disappear one day. But even at that level, we must understand that according to the scientific thought of conservation of matter, matter remains the same. You can't create anything. You can't destroy anything. You can only change the form of it. And if you look at us from that standpoint, then all that is that's happening is that which wasn't there or was not, appeared not to be there, appears, and that same appearance one day goes back. So from unmanifest to manifest to unmanifest, nothing is destroyed. So what is the grief all about? And the Chaitanya, the Chinmaya in us, the enlivening spirit, whatever name we want to give it, is immaterial. But that enlivening spirit is the same in everyone, as the electricity is the same in everyone. It appears differently, like the clock, the fan, the light, the air conditioning. But the basic source is exactly the same. So is the enlivening entity that enlivens all this body's mind and intellect, never perishes. So then what is the grief? Isn't it so simple, and yet Bhagavan, it took him 701 verses, 18 chapters to explain this. And at least at the end Arjuna understood then, and we have been explaining this so many times by so many acharyas, we still spend a little more time. Don't be so serious. There's no reason to have such serious faces. Why?